It is Thursday, March 12th, 2020. This is the Android Central Podcast. My name is Daniel Bader, and this week, well, it's kind of solemn. And joining me from, you know, their home offices, where a lot of us are probably sequestered these days, are Wagner and Jerry Hildenbrand. How are you two doing? It's been a week.
It has definitely been a week.
Yep.
And it's not over quite yet.
Yeah. So obviously this week, this episode, we're going to spend some time talking about the coronavirus. We're going to talk about the fallout from the just the massive stock market dip that put us into a bear market over the last few days. The fact that a lot of tech companies have sent their employees home. A lot of restrictions have been put on travel. And it just seems like right now is a very, I think vulnerable would be the right word. Everybody's feeling a little anxious, a little vulnerable. And it's really hard to talk about phones and software updates and things that we normally would, just given the gravity of the situation. So we're going to spend the first half of the podcast talking about the coronavirus. And if you are interested in hearing about tech, you know, Ara put out her Galaxy S20 review yesterday. I reviewed the Galaxy S20 Plus last week. We'll talk some Pixel 4a leaks. We will. That'll be in the second half of the show. But Jerry, I just want to get your feeling on things. How are you feeling, you know, as somebody who works from home? You're not sent home from an office, you know. How has your life been affected so far by what's going on?
Mostly precautionary, you know, measures, and a little bit of, you know, I'm a little antsy. I don't have the best health, and I would hate to get this stuff. But it's little things too. You know, we can't find any toilet paper. Clorox wipes, all that kind of stuff. It's gone. Everything is just gone, and it reminds me a lot. And Phil basically said the same thing on Twitter. It's reminds you of, you know, when they announced that a hurricane's headed your way. It's just the things you're looking for, the things you need, you have to scramble to try to get them. And then you have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best all at the same time.
Ara, you, you know, you're in Orlando, which is basically like a tourist hub in the US. How have things been for you? You still go to the parks, you're still seeing a lot of tourists, but, you know, has the volume subsided somewhat? Is there more caution when you're walking through the parks? Are people being a little bit more, they're exercising a little bit more caution with shaking hands, with high fives, things like that?
I mean, there's not really a whole lot of handshaking that goes on at the Disney parks. High fives are a little harder to come by, but normally when a cast member is high-fiving somebody, they're doing it with one of those like Mickey gloves or Stitch hands on anyway, so there's less person-to-person contact. We're supposed to be in like the start of the heavy spring break season for us, and I was at the Magic Kingdom yesterday, and while there were still two-hour lines for most of the big attractions, the crowd was definitely not where I expected it to be for the middle of March. Like, I was expecting 3-hour wait times for the top attractions, and I don't think that we have as many people here right now. We still have a good number, because for people who book vacations to Walt Disney World, that's thousands of dollars, and unless you bought trip insurance, you're probably not going to get most of that money back. So, for a lot of people, it's a matter of until the parks are closed, which I foresee happening in the next 20 days or so. Until the parks are closed, I think families are still going to come here. They're just going to use hand sanitizer more often. They're going to be wiping their bags or their phones or whatever down with disinfectant wipes. They're people are definitely carrying around more hand sanitizer, which I've always done just because I don't like my hands feeling dirty and grimy after touching like a handrail or one of the ride vehicle lap bars. But I don't know. There's definitely fewer people there, but there's still probably too many right now.
And I mean, it seems like everything is being canceled slowly but surely. Last night, as we're recording this, a player on the Utah Jazz was found to have contracted coronavirus. So the entire NBA is now suspended as they await.
For at least a month.
For at least a month, which, you know, we're getting into playoff season or approaching playoff season. So, you know, that will certainly delay, you know, a lot of people's summer, you know, like summer entertainment revolves around sport. We're hearing more and more that the Olympics might be delayed indefinitely or canceled outright. You know, a lot of, we talked last week about how Google I.O. was canceled, but now E3, which is in June, has been canceled as well. We're hearing that the major console releases, the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X, may be delayed until 2021. I mean, these are massive decisions that companies are having to make around, you know, protecting their employees, around making sure that they are prioritizing the long-term health of the business and sacrificing some short-term profits. But at the same time, you know, the stock market is tanking. I mean, these companies are like Google. Let me check right now. So right now, Google is down another 6%. It's down. Whew.
Yeah, but like everything's down that much. We hit a circuit breaker today. That necessitated a 7% drop across the board.
It's wild. Like everything, every tech stock is down like between 10 and 50%.
Well, the wildest thing about that is that this is the second time that's happened this week.
Yeah.
And I still don't think we've seen the end of it.
And Jerry, I mean, this is not necessarily unprecedented, but it is unprecedented in our recent history, right? There's been 11 years of the, you know, stock market surging with, you know, some intermittent blips in there. But this is really the first time that we've hit a bear market in a long time since the 2008 stock crash. What do you, you know, like our purview is tech, right? Like we talk about tech, that's our focus. The implications of this are going to be pretty massive, but they don't change the fundamentals of the market as a whole, right? In the sense that these companies are still innovating. They're still putting out products. They're still, you know, doing what they need to do. They're just doing it more slowly with people working from home. What's your take on the long-term effects of something like this on, say, Google or Microsoft or Apple or something like that?
I think probably the smartest way to look at it is erase everything they were going to do in the first half of 2020 and, you know, maybe even further into 2020, because products may not launch in perfect condition, but all these companies try to make sure everything's ready before they make any sort of major announcement or a release like the Xbox or, you know, another Pixel phone or anything like that. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff where everybody's scrambling at the last minute to make sure it's good to go. And you can't really do that if everybody's working from home. So temper your expectations on what you might have wanted right now, but know that it's still coming. It's going to be a great Christmas.
People are not thinking about buying things that much right now. I mean,
right.
People are desperate to buy toilet paper and hand sanitizer based on just, you know, what we see from Google search trends. But, you know, I don't know if a lot of people are really thinking about buying houses or cars. You know, they may have to make emergency purchases if their dishwasher or fridge breaks down or something. But at the, you know, I think this is the kind of blip in productivity where people get really nervous, and they start putting aside those major purchases.
But you have to remember the stock market, a lot of it is based on, you know,
futures.
Yeah,
the stock market is based on
confidence. And nobody is, or probably you should be, confident that Google's going to have a stellar first quarter, or Apple, or anybody, and these new products are going to, you know, raise the value of the company, because they're all in a, you know, containment mode, trying to, like you said before, they have to think of the welfare of the employees and the long-term effects that it'll have on the company. And that means that the short-term's going to get put on the back burner.
Well, Jerry, I mean, if everybody's going to get stuck home for a month, not that they're going to have any new products, but wouldn't that probably be a pretty decent quarter for Google, because they make their money in search and ads, and people are going to be stuck home with nothing to do but look at the internet?
I have thought about that too, and wondering if people are looking at Google and even Microsoft the wrong way, because they make money through existing services and products that people already have and already are paying for. But, you know, I'm not really good at the stock market. I kept my Motorola stock until it was worth 7,000% less than I paid for it.
But, I mean, you don't have to be a stock market guru to understand, you know, that some companies are going to benefit, not benefit, but they're going to be affected less by this than others.
Some companies are better equipped to weather storms like this, and that's companies that can remote work and don't need a whole lot of people physically in one place to do their job.
Right. And a company that, like Apple, that relies on supply chains usually within China, and a company that hasn't diversified its revenue streams as much as, you know, perhaps a Samsung, is going to be adversely affected by its inability to get the components from suppliers that are in massive shortage or are being stockpiled but can't be exported out of a country. Whereas, you know, Google has it's basically a service, a software and services company, right? It provides ads, and that's how it makes the bulk of its revenue. What's interesting to me is, you know, we're not really talking about this as an opportunity market for a Google or a Microsoft, right? Nobody's really talking about this as who's going to benefit from the coronavirus.
I mean, right? the only companies that have any real chance to benefit would be the companies that can, companies like Google and Microsoft, who are like, okay, we've been trying to sell y'all remote working systems for years, and now it's finally time, guys. Time to get something that works, so that way your people can work from home when they're sick. Because that's going to be what this is all about.
And Ara, do you think that more than anything, this is going to introduce a culture shift as companies that have never really embraced remote work culture have to finally allow it because they have no choice?
Companies have been shifting towards remote work more over the last 15 years, although, I mean, some tech companies have done it since the beginning. My dad is a lifer at IBM. I know he's the last of a dying breed there, but even going back to when I was, like, in middle school and high school, my dad had a laptop that he would bring home, and he would remote into his work and just work from home in the evenings. And he still does that. He has two nice big monitors set up in his bedroom, and he'll dock in his MacBook and remote into a Unix system and just keep working. So remote work has been something that's been around for a long time, but companies haven't really seen as much value in it until about the last 10 or so years. This is the year that remote work is going to become something that isn't a luxury, but a necessity.
And a lot of companies are trying to take advantage of that by offering free premium accounts, Google, Slack, Microsoft, and a bunch of others.
And not just companies. I mean, schools are going to need this too. If schools can't gather for the rest of the regular school year from now till June, We can't not have kids be educated for 3 months. That's going to throw off so many things if an entire year of children have to be held back.
I mean, that's terrifying. That is absolutely terrifying to think that.
And that's happening. My school district closes as of next Monday with no announcement of how long.
And no announcement of any sort of remote work possibilities. Although, Jerry, I guess West Virginia, internet in the outer regions there can be a little sparse if you don't know where to look for it, can't it?
Well, yeah, but not the part that I live in. I basically live in Maryland. I'm sure they've got a remote experience set up or in the works, so the kids just don't get to have this school year count, but they haven't announced any of that yet.
And a lot of these work from home policies have to do with something called social distancing, which isn't just advice for people to be less social. You know, it's not like Sundar Pichai is telling people not to hang out at the water cooler and have lunch together. The idea of social distancing is meant to so-called flatten the curve and make this pandemic, which is now official from the World Health Organization, spread out more slowly and have less of an upfront impact on really tested healthcare systems all over the world. And as we've seen from Italy, where there was a major influx of infections in the last couple of weeks, their healthcare system has buckled. And as a result, the country has basically shut down travel and closed its borders and isn't allowing anybody to leave their homes unless for, you know, emergency reasons or, to go from one place to the other. But it's a little scary to think that that could be the next step here in North America.
If it has to be, it has to be. Once it gets to a certain point, there's no other effective thing to do.
And more importantly, social distancing now and voluntarily trying to limit your exposure. What flatten the curve really is meant to do is to prevent the healthcare system from being overwhelmed, because we know we're probably going to have X number of infections. It's a matter of spreading those infections out over a longer period so that way the healthcare system can deal with it. Because when you have a severe case of coronavirus, it attacks the respiratory system. It means you're not going to be able to breathe properly. And you're not going to, and if your body cannot get oxygen, if your red blood cells cannot get oxygen, you die. And we do not have enough respirators. And there was a specific piece of equipment that China was using that helped them recover as many people as they did that had coronavirus. We do not have enough of that machine either here in America. So it's a matter of trying to limit the number of severe cases by limiting the overall infections at any one time.
I saw a statistic in hospitals that were qualified to, you know, handle a severe case of the virus. There are only 110,000 ICU beds in the entire country.
I mean, that's astounding. And when you think about the number of people there are in the country.
Yep.
Well, we've been killing small hospitals for the last 15 years. What did we think was going to happen?
I don't want to turn this into a political podcast. That's not...
No. That's not political. That's a business thing.
No. I say that as a preamble to what I'm about to say next.
Uh-oh.
I think it's important to understand that we're all trying to be... We're all trying to get through this together, and there have been, several attempts from politicians to make this a partisan issue. But I think there is a sort of widespread understanding that this is not a discriminatory disease, right? Illness. This is not a virus that gives a crap who you are or who you vote for. And some countries like Singapore and Vietnam have been praised for their early action. by closing borders, making travel more restrictive, by really getting in front of this. Whereas the U.S. has been criticized for being slow to act, both from within the country and from the World Health Organization and many other international health related organizations. And I just wonder, from I don't live in the U.S., so I'm curious from both of you, what is your perception of how people are thinking about how this virus will have to change the way that they live, or whether they are a bit more blasé because the government has until very recently said this is a very low, you have a very low chance of being infected.
To be fair, another big part of the reason that the U.S. likely hasn't been taking this as seriously as they have until this week is the fact that we didn't have that many confirmed number of cases, because in order to have a confirmed case, you had to test them and have them test positive. And until like this week, maybe late last week, there just weren't that many people that could get tested. A lot of people were turned away from getting tested in the last 2 weeks. People who had symptoms and had been in contact with somebody, they weren't able to be tested. So those people are likely positive, but can't be a confirmed case. So there's probably thousands more cases already here than are being reported, because for some bizarre reason, the U.S. decided that they needed to have their own coronavirus test instead of using the one that the rest of the world use. Like, we've tested 11,000 people for coronavirus. South Korea's been testing 10,000 people a day.
Yeah, and I think, that will sort itself out. I know the Cleveland Clinic, for instance, today, the New York Times reported that the Cleveland Clinic has a new test that will be able to scale to thousands of tests a day. And I, obviously the CDC has now expanded its testing mandate, allowing people who don't just have symptoms of the virus to be tested. That is obviously contributed to the number of confirmed cases in the U.S. I think it's up to 1,400 or 1,500 right now, as we're reporting this. But what's really interesting to me is this travel ban. So last night, President Trump addresses the nation, and he says that there is now a travel ban for foreign citizens, essentially people who don't have a U.S. passport or green card, traveling into the United States from 26 countries in the Shenzhen zone, which make up the sort of travel the restriction-free area of the EU. And anybody that's been in that region for the last 14 days is not going to be able to travel to the U.S. for at least 30 days starting tomorrow night at midnight, which is Friday night. Jerry, what's your take on that move and whether that will actually slow down the number of cases in the U.S.?
Well, it definitely will. I don't know that it's enough or it was done early enough. But the first thing I thought of when I heard that last night is, I hope this isn't just a blanket, policy. Some things you have to look at the human factor, and it should be reviewed for, certain people. Let's say you've got family here in the States and you need to come help them. And, you from Albania or wherever, one of the countries that has the blanket ban thrown over it. I hope there's some sort of review process. And, it would be fairly easy to test someone and have them, get some sort of document that shows they've been tested and are negative, and on a case-by-case basis review rather than just throw it out there. But I don't have much confidence that that's going to be the case. I just want it to be.
Yeah.
The horse is out of the barn. We have over 1,000 cases, and now that testing becomes more prevalent, we're going to see that number of cases skyrocket over the next 5 days. We already have it here, and we already have community spread. It's about trying to prevent any more spread, and it's about trying to keep the healthcare system from being overwhelmed.
Yep.
Which is very hard to do when people are starting to panic. which is what this week has been.
Okay, so shifting a little bit, a lot of people are going to be at home more than they have been in a very long time. People are not going to work. They are not necessarily going out to socialize. They are just staying at home and trying to find things to do, you know, whether they're being self-isolating, whether they're self-isolating or being quarantined actively, there's going to be a lot of downtime. So a lot of our traffic, you know, just a little bit of inside baseball for you, comes from articles that are already on the internet. We call it evergreen traffic. So, you know, a lot of our traffic comes from news that we publish today or big reviews or whatever. But a lot of it is just stuff that Google has indexed and has deemed popular and good quality. And as a result, when you search for something on Google, it pops up on page one. And one of the articles that has just completely spiked over the last few days is an article that Ara, you wrote or updated, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, you know, how to clean and disinfect your smartphone. People are really, really concerned now that we know that the coronavirus can live on objects and surfaces for, I believe, 2 to 3 days in the right conditions, that their smartphones need to be cleaned regularly. What's your take on this? Is, you know, we often hear that our smartphones are the most, you know, bacteria infested objects that we use every day outside of our keyboards and mice. How often should people be sanitizing their phones? And how do you recommend doing it in a way that's not onerous and time consuming?
Well, first off, there's been a lot of people saying over the last couple of weeks that, yes, you can use like Lysol and Clorox disinfectant wipes on your phone. And if your phone's over a year old and your oleophobic coating on your screen has already completely worn off, then yeah, probably. But for most of us who don't want to have a phone that smudges like literally the instant we touch it, I really recommend just using either a very diluted isopropyl solution and a microfiber cloth, or using a lot of the lens, like the pre-moistened lens cleaning wipes that you can buy for like your camera and your smartphone. I love the Zeiss wipes. Those are what I use to clean my screen before I take any photos for my articles. A lot of those have a small amount of alcohol in it in order to help it evaporate quickly. And that small amount of alcohol isn't going to kill every single germ on the surface of your screen, but it's going to kill a decent amount of them. And so long as you are cleaning your phone probably once or twice a day while this outbreak is going on. Normally, I would say you only need to clean your phone like once a week. If you're that scared about it and you're the kind of person who likes to just be a clean freak anyway, phone soaps is great. It's very easy to use. I run my phone through it. I run my car keys through it too. I run that through every couple of weeks just because that and my driver's license and my annual pass get handled by cast members every time I drive to the park because I have to show my IDs in order to park. So anything that other people touch on a regular basis that is small enough to fit within, like, anything smaller than a paperback book that is touched by multiple people over the course of a week, you can probably run it through a phone soap without any issue. And that's part of why I love it, because unlike Lysol wipes or anything, you run out of those wipes. This is a UV light that'll kill bacterial and viruses on the surfaces of your products, and it won't run out so long as you have power.
A lot of people have also been looking for things to do at home. And one of the articles that we've seen spike as well is our roundup of the best Android games. You know, Jerry, this is something that I've found really interesting. A lot of people are just playing more games in general on their phones. Mm-hmm. But this is like pretty amazing to see the number of people that are like, okay, I'm going to have a lot of time free this coming weekend. Or, you know, if I want to take a lunch break at home, instead of talking to somebody at work, I'm just going to sit on the couch and play a few games. What's your take on like overall usage? Are people going to be spending a lot more time nose in their phones than they were previously? Do you think that we're going to see spikes in like other social media services? I think that's pretty obvious, yeah. But you know, it seems like the number of people using these services and looking for ways to fill their time has just completely exploded way beyond even my expectations.
Yeah, this is, you know, I hate to spin it this way, but this is like a boom season for game developers and Netflix. And, you know, if you've got any sort of interactive website that can occupy people's time, you are definitely gonna see a lot more people using it than normal. And that's, you know, just natural. We don't like to be bored. And I love to just sit down sometimes and play with the dog or play with my parrot and just do nothing and just sit around and relax. But I can't do that an entire weekend or I'll go crazy. So yeah, I know we're probably going to watch 3 or 4 Netflix movies this weekend because we're not leaving the house. And I'm not a, you know, isolated case. There are a whole lot of people that are going to be in that same situation.
If I have one suggestion for people who are looking for something to do with their time over the next 3 or 4 weeks, get into baking, since you're not going to be able to make grocery runs as frequently as you might otherwise. And more importantly, a sourdough starter is something that will provide for you for a very long time.
That's a really good point. I mean, you could also freeze stuff. Like, I know a lot of people are... I had friends over last night for dinner, and one of the people said that they're buying lentils and chickpeas because they are the most protein and carb rich of the beans, and that, you know, you can make so many different things with them, and if they're dry, they store forever. If they're canned, they store forever. They're just a really high, you know, very nutritious source of everything you need. And I found that really interesting because, like, everybody I've heard has been like, okay, I'm going to stock up on toilet paper. I'm going to hoard Purell.
Well, you know why they're stocking up on toilet paper, right?
Why?
Because at the very beginning of the COVID crisis, Procter & Gamble said, hey, since there were so many shutdowns in the manufacturing area in China, some of our toilet paper is going to be in short supply because we can't produce any more right now because our factory is shut down. And so people were like, oh, I'm not going to be able to buy this. I should go stock up right now. And then that's just kept on and kept on and kept on.
My local health department, I just happenstance, I 3 weeks ago, I had a really bad case of the flu. And they couldn't test if I had coronavirus, but there was a workaround. They made sure it was just the flu by giving me the flu test and then checking for the antibodies. No, Jerry, you just had the flu. Everything's fine. But still, this is what you need to know. I had to sit down and speak with somebody. The grocery store and the pharmacy are the two places that they say definitely do not visit unless you absolutely have to. And I guess that's because that's where a lot of people are going to go, especially if they're sick.
Well, yeah, I had a sinus infection 2 weeks ago, right before my dad got here. And yeah, the only place I went when I was sick was Publix to pick up the prescription and pick up a fresh box Kleenex.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to me. Like, everybody has a different take on how they're going to survive this apocalypse. For me, I'm actually really looking forward to just, like, reading more and just getting out of the hellhole that is the news cycle. You know, there's only so much that I can do, right? I can take my precautions. But, you know, as somebody who works from home, I don't go out a lot during the day. I've tried to restrict the number of times I leave the house at night. You know, if we go out for drinks or dinner or something every once in a while. My wife and I went out for dinner the other night, and there was a man sitting next to us on a table, and he just spent the entire time coughing. And, you know, it's one of those things where your mind goes somewhere and you're just like, you know, you want to be like, why are you leaving the house? Why are you, you know, putting us all at risk? But at the same time, you know, this is flu season, right? In addition to this outbreak, it is regular flu season. And a lot of people are just have a cold. And it's one of those things where anecdotally, we've seen evidence that self-isolation has actually lowered the number of regular flu cases because people are taking more care to clean their hands on a regular basis, and they're just not really going out all that much. So community spread just isn't as prevalent in 2020 for, you know, influenza A and B and the other strains that are always around as there would be otherwise.
Again, it's amazing what you can get done when people can work from home or have paid sick leave that they're encouraged to use.
Yeah. I mean, that seems obvious, but not everybody has that privilege.
It seems that way, but it isn't here.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to thank a sponsor because the train has to keep moving, and we'll be right back to talk about some actual tech stuff. So if you skipped over this entire portion and just wanted to hear about phones, it's coming right up. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Indeed. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your shortlist of applicants fast. Also, add skills tests to your job posts so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. Their library of more than 50 skill tests range from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/ACP and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/ACP. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. Okay, back to the show. Okay, so there was a little bit of tech news this week, and some of it was Galaxy S20 related. Ara, you spent a few days reviewing the small Galaxy S20 and sort of came to the same conclusion that I did, that it's a really good phone. And it's, you know, funnily enough, like, this is the one major phone release that got out before all of the coronavirus stuff happened. And it's in stores. You can go and buy it. It's available worldwide. And it seems like this is the year that if Samsung was going to come in under the wire, this was the phone series to do it, right? There's really nothing, there's really not a whole lot wrong with these phones, based on at least what you wrote.
Yeah, no, I've very much enjoyed the Galaxy S20. I mean, I wish it wasn't $1,000, but I think it actually does earn that price tag between the screen and the battery life that I've been seeing on it.
Yeah, let's talk about the battery life. You had really good battery life, even on the 4,000 milliamp hour cell on the smaller Galaxy S20. I'm hearing similar things. This is probably due to the efficiency of the Snapdragon 865. But Jerry, you know, is it possible that there are other things at play here that are also keeping battery life as high as it is?
Probably. I mean, Samsung's going to do their own thing, work in the restrictions they're allowed to do and try to make the battery life as good on their phones as possible. But I really think it's the display size and the large battery.
Right. So they're just brute forcing it. They're putting a really big cell in a considerably smaller phone and getting, getting the best results possible.
And what makes me say that is there are some people saying they don't get good battery life, but those are the people who are forcing it to run at 120 hertz all the time and keeping the brightness way up. So the screen still uses the battery if you turn it up. So it tells me that there's no real magic other than the people who engineered it found a way to get a big battery in it.
So I heard from a friend of mine who has been sort of looking at the power usage side of the Galaxy S20. And what he was saying is that there's evidence to show that the display on the Galaxy S20 is actually more power hungry at 60 hertz than the Galaxy S10, because the floor, the power draw, even when the screen is off, is some 30% more. And that at 120 hertz, it's 30% higher than even that. So Samsung has sort of retrofitted a system that will give the screen 120 hertz, but it's doing it in a really inefficient way and is getting really good battery life just, as I said, by, you know, through physics, just by ramping up that cell size. And it's because it's able to make the rest of the phone as compact as possible internally that it is able to put these batteries in there and still make the phone pretty slim. Do you think this is going to be a trend this year? You know, companies sort of trying to throw the biggest possible battery in there and then, you know, maybe sacrificing other things. Like, I guess there's no more OEMs to sacrifice the headphone jack, but perhaps other things may go as a result.
Well, I mean, if we're going to have a smartphone fad for 2020, fitting the biggest possible battery that you can in there seems like a pretty decent one. Because that's something that everybody will use, as opposed to like a time of flight sensor or that space zoom, which is a situational at best feature.
I also think, you know, it's interesting that Samsung hasn't really said much about the 120 hertz display. It's just this is the way it is, right? You either use it at 120 hertz at 1080p essentially, or you can use the QHD plus resolution at 1440p. And, you know, we saw the Xiaomi Find X2. It can do both. It can do 120 hertz at full QHD plus resolution. But we don't really know what the battery life impact is going to be on that. Jerry, do you think that Samsung should have just been like, okay, have it your way, but just, you know, it's your loss, right? You can deal with the battery life issues as a result.
Yeah, I think they should, but I understand why they didn't. That's basically admitting one of the features of the phone takes another feature away. And no company's going to do that. You know, you can look at the opposite end of the scale and the Pixel 4. Google obviously doesn't care about the battery life in the phone. They just tell you it'll charge really fast. Samsung's the opposite. They've always, you know, touted that this phone will last you, you know, a lot longer because of, you know, the battery we put in it and all the Samsung engineering behind it. And for them to say, well, you can use it at full blast, but it's going to, you know, have an adverse effect on your battery isn't something they want to do.
I guess the question is, you know, this is a company, I tweeted something a few days ago about how Samsung still lets you enable or disable so-called fast charging and super fast charging, and how, you know, this is just a completely ridiculous settings menu that very few people are going to understand because there's no explanation. Like, why would you want fast charging disabled but super fast enabled or vice versa? And, you know, this is a company that usually gives you as many options as possible. And yet here, it seems like there's a very good reason for it. Now, I understand that, you know, it's an experience concern that, you know, you don't want your battery dying before 3 p.m. But Ara, do you think that Samsung should have maybe put a 90 hertz limit on the display and then given access to 1440p, like given you three tiers? Because it's not like it's a hardware limitation. You can offer 90 hertz if you wanted to.
I don't really see why they would want to have three different refresh rates that the everything in the software has to understand. I think it's easier to just have, you have high and low, and then for your screen quality, you have medium, high, or low, and medium is only medium is the limit when you're at 120. And honestly, I think the 120 hertz refresh rate is more important than your than your resolution. Or at least for me, it has. I normally use a phone at 1080p. 1440 is nice, but it'll burn. But rendering those extra pixels burns more battery than the benefit for most of my apps.
I agree. I don't see that much difference going from 1080p to 1440p. I see a massive difference going from 60 hertz to 120 hertz.
And I mean, unless you're somebody who does just an absolute crap ton of image editing, or you're somebody who surfs image-based like subreddits all day, most of the time you are not going to notice a difference either. Especially because a lot of video services like Disney Plus can do HDR, but most of the time if you're streaming, your internet's probably not going to allow for it unless you're at home.
The other thing, Jerry, that I saw when changing from 60 hertz to 120 hertz was a slight white balance difference between the two.
That makes total sense. It's white is not a thing on an OLED display. There is no white subpixel. So it uses blue. We've all seen that color blue, you know, an ice blue that looks almost white. And it's flashing in front of your eyes twice as fast. For a lot of people, it's going to look better. For some people, it's going to look worse. But it's a physical difference.
That makes a lot of sense, and it sort of backs up why some people have seen it and some people don't, because people perceive colors a little differently,
right?
In different external lighting environments,
and some people can perceive the flickering at 60 hertz. There are people out there with, let's call them super eyes, that can just you can't tell it's flickering, but you can tell there's something there. And at 120 hertz, that goes away, and they may think that it looks amazing when it's, you know, running faster. And then there's people like you who see, you know, there's an issue there when it's running faster. But it's just there. It is there.
I agree. Yeah, it's strange, but it's not a deal breaker at all. Okay, I want to shift before the end of the show just to talk a little bit about the Pixel 4a. So we saw our top leak so far this week. The Pixel 4a is now featured in a Spanish language leak video on YouTube. If you've been to our site over the last couple of days, you might have seen it. And somebody got a hold of an engineering unit. It looks pretty much like the renders that we saw a few months ago. Capacitive sensor on the back, a left oriented hole punch camera on the front of the phone with smaller bezels than the Pixel 4. Definitely a plastic phone, and I would say less glossy than the at least in the colorway that we saw. Ara, what was your first impression of this Pixel 4a leak?
I want to know what possessed him to put the selfie camera in the corner again. We saw this with the S10. It just looks ugly in the corner. Put it dead center, please. Otherwise, everything looks great, and this is probably going to be the best phone of the year for the majority of folks who don't want to spend $1,000 on an S20.
So we now know that there will be a Snapdragon 730. That was never in dispute. But part of this leak was the RAM amount. We now know that the Pixel 4a will have 6 gigabytes of RAM, which is an increase from 4 gigabytes in the 3a. Jerry, that's the same amount that's in the Pixel 4 series. And we know that for all of its faults, the Pixel 4 performs really well on 6 gigs of RAM. What about the Snapdragon 730? Is that going to be a big enough jump from the 670 in the 3a that people are going to notice?
It should. If you remember when Qualcomm announced the 700 series, they basically told us that this is a high-end, you know, chip. It's, you know, of course we have our 800 series and we love it, but the 700 is going to be able to do just about everything you would ever want to do on your smartphone. Of course, you know, you can go back to the argument that they don't know what I want to do. But there are a lot of differences that make the 700 series, you know, better than high-end phones of 2 years ago with the 800 series in them. This is going to be a big difference. You can make the Pixel 3a bog down a little bit if you want to. It's going to take a lot more to make the 4a bog down.
Right. And this is an 8-nanometer part, so it's not quite as advanced as the 800 series, the Snapdragon 855 and 865, but it's a pretty big efficiency jump. We're also getting a faster clock speed per core at 2.2 gigahertz, faster cellular data, category 15 as opposed to category 12 on the 670, a much more powerful GPU in the Adreno 618 as opposed to the 670s, what was it? The 615. So, you know, a lot of improvements, and some will be noticeable, some won't. But at the end of the day, most people buying this are not really going to care, right? This is still going to be a $400 phone that will outperform and outpace most flagships released this year, if the 3A showed us anything.
Yep.
And I mean, the Pixel software can't be discounted either at this point, because it's going to have the most... It has the most reputable record update, but more importantly, the Pixel feature drops. Like, most of my family now has Pixel 3A XLs, because that was one of the few unlocked phones that can do Wi-Fi calling on AT&T. But my parents use call screening a lot, and they love that feature. And when my dad was here with his best friend for golf, and they were home, my dad got a spam, one of the election spam calls, and he turned on call screening, and his friend immediately looked over and went, "Oh, that, how did you get that? That's awesome."
Yeah, that is, it's like, it's magic. I love doing it so much.
It's the one thing I miss from the Pixel 4 right now.
But at least you have live caption, so.
Which is cool, and I'm very happy that that's here. That should be standard on all phones.
A little bit of solace. All right, any remaining Pixel 4a wants, you know, desires, dislikes from what we've seen so far?
I want a cool color this year. The lilac purple was pretty. I want a better one this year.
I want orange, bright orange.
What is wrong with you?
So many things.
I just wish that, you know, it was, it's a phone I have no interest in, because I'm not going to be able to hold it and use it. I need a bezel to hold on to. I don't want my thumbs and my palms touching all over the screen. The Pixel 4 is about all I can take. Anything with a smaller bezel than that, I just don't want to use.
Well, Jerry, you'll always have the Pixel 4.
Yep. Because
the bezels on that are sizable. Well, I think we're going to end it there. Send us your tweets. Jerry is at GB Hill. Ara is at Ara Wagco. I am at Journey Dan. We are at Android Central. Leave us a review on iTunes if you do listen there. We haven't found any other places to leave reviews. Send us email, podcast@Android Central. We love hearing from you. Stay safe out there, folks. Send us your coronavirus prep stories. Tell us what you're doing on your phones, how you're spending your downtime. Send us your favorite Android games that are keeping you busy right now, because personally, I'm just tired of playing Hold Down over and over and over again. That's it. We will be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adios.